Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Wayne and I'm an alcoholic. Our final speaker tonight is Polly P. Over to you, Polly.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Wayne. Sorry. Wayne, how long am I supposed to talk?
25 minutes.
Okay, thank you so much. That's wonderful. Thank you. My name is Polly Pistol and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. I have a home group, and I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I sponsor, and I'm a very active member in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So those are my credentials. And Wayne, thank you, thank you, thank you for asking me. This is wonderful. I've never gone into another room. That was really an adventure too. So this is great. And I loved the other three speakers. Thank you so much. And two of you will have stories. That's great. I feel like I'm talking with celebrities. That's great. How exciting. I'm just going to tell you briefly, just give you kind of a rundown. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am supposed to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I'm just going to give you some highlights of that and tell you what that was about. And I am so grateful. If when I gave my sobriety date, if you noticed, I said April the 11th. And so I just had 43 years. And I'm sure in this group that nobody's impressed by that, but I am very impressed by that. I cannot believe I was the woman who could not drink no matter what. And I had two little boys that I couldn't take care of, all of this, and I could not drink no matter what. I'd also like to share with you that a lot of times we come into Alcoholics Anonymous and we hear some really tragic childhood stories. And somehow or another, maybe the newcomer or something thinks maybe it's a requirement to have a tragic childhood in order to become an alcoholic. Well, I'm here to tell you, I was probably one of the most loved, the most spoiled children ever. And there is absolutely from that, and not only that, I'm an only child. And my parents constantly told me how much they loved me. They showed me in every way. Now, there was something inside of me that even as a little girl, I don't know if it's that weird gene we have or what, but whatever it is, Dr. Silfork said that we were mentally and bodily different from our fellows. So whatever that is that makes me different from my fellows, I felt it as a little girl. I just never felt like anything was enough. I was never satisfied. And there's another big book that says there's nothing worse than an ungrateful child. And that was me. I was just never satisfied for all the sacrifices that my parents made for me to do everything they could to make me a happy little girl. But it just seemed like I was always, you know, never satisfied. I married an Air Force officer when I was 18 years old, and I thought I had married this gorgeous man in this uniform, but I had no idea what my job as an Air Force officer's wife was going to be. I didn't have no clue. I had not a clue what I had signed up for. Now, the other thing is, I was raised Southern Baptist, and I love all the places I'm hearing from: Vienna, England, Sydney. This is just like a worldwide meeting right here. And I don't know if any of you know about Southern Baptists, but if you come, it's a very fundamental, screaming preachers, screaming you're born a sinner, you're going to burn in hell, and all these kind of things, a very, very very religion that just scared me to death. And they'd scream from the podium. Their faces were red. And so what I came to, I knew about God. I always knew about God. I just never, ever thought I'd be good enough for God, because it just seemed like, and they would say things like, if you've thought it, you've done it. And I'm just here to tell you, I thought a lot. And I just always felt like I was just, you know, this terrible, terrible sinner. And one of the things the Baptist Church said in their fire and brimstone was, thou shalt not drink. And I didn't. I didn't drink. And I went through all my high school years. So I guess, and kind of, I'm a late bloomer. But I went, when I married this man, I ended up, we had a lot of events to go to. And as an Air Force officer's wife, I was expected to attend all these events unless I had a very, very good excuse. And so the first time I went to a coffee, and that's when the base commander told us what we were going to do. And then I went to an Air Force officer's wife's luncheon. And at that luncheon, there was this big, long table with all these little glasses lined up. And there was a fountain and with this liquid coming out of it. And I saw all these ladies picking up this drink and putting it up to the fountain. And I picked up a glass and I put it under the fountain. And the reason I want to share this with you is I feel like it is so important for me, because this was my first drink. And one of the things I know is that it made such an imprint in my mind, that first drink, that I remember it as if it were yesterday. I can still feel it. I can still taste it. And I just took this sherry, this little wussy drink, sherry, and I took it and I drank it down, and my throat got warm and my belly got warm, and it just seemed like I relaxed. And I was one of these real uptight people, always nervous, always on the verge of a nervous breakdown, just kind of like a hysterical woman. And that alcohol just soothed me down. Now, what I know for me is, because whatever goes on in my body, when I took that drink that day, my life was altered forever. I would never be the same again, because I didn't become a falling down alcoholic that day. But what I had done is that I had ignited the alcoholism in me with alcohol. I had ignited the disease. And what happened, the big book says that we could have stopped at any time. The problem is we don't ever want to stop. That's why we don't stop. But I did stop when I was pregnant with my first son. So I still had a choice. I still had a choice. But when after that, I had no choices. As soon as I had him, I was like, it seemed like I thought about alcohol. I prayed. It was just there all the time. And after I gave birth to him, I started drinking. And my drinking progressed terribly. Now, the reason I tell you about me being a military wife is because, as a military wife, I was married to an officer that flew bomber airplanes. He was a bomber pilot. And what happened was, he was gone for years at a time. And I was left with the two little boys that I had. Now, I don't come to you as an alcoholic with DUIs, going to jail, having divorces, because having affairs. I did all that. I did all my affairs sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did none of that while I was drinking. What I did is, I was left with these two little boys, and I would drink. And what I would do is, I'm the person in There Is a Solution where it talks about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. what happens to me as I turn into this very mean, abusive person when I'm drinking. And what I would do is I would abuse my sons. I would hit them. I would push them into walls. I would scream at them unmercifully. And I just was like insane with those kids. I just couldn't take care of them. I didn't know what to do with them. I was going to Air Force doctors saying how crazy I was. And all they would do was just give me some kind of pill that I just ended up drinking on. And I would just become crazier. And the reason I do that is because a lot of what I want to talk about is the forgiveness in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I ended up going to treatment, I ended up going to detox twice and to treatment once for like 6 weeks in treatment. And what I did is in the detox center I was in, I ended up asking the man who was in charge of that detox center that I went to first, I ended up asking him to be my sponsor. And when I ended up being court committed to treatment, and what happened for me is I ended up going to this man and asking him to sponsor me while I was in treatment. And when I got out of treatment, I loved listening to how the other three speakers talked about their beginnings in Alcoholics Anonymous, because my beginnings were very exciting too. And as soon as I got out of treatment, he had told me to come to his house. And I went bopping into his house and I said, I'm on my sixth step. I've worked the first five steps in treatment. I'm on my sixth step. And he looked at me and he said, no, Polly, you're on your first step. All of that is treatment center cycle babble. We're going to do this program out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the things that he had me do that I also have the women I sponsor do, and that is that he first had me tell him my life story. And when he told me that, he says, but Polly, before you tell me your story, I want you to tell me your parents' story. And by doing that, I got to see and got to put voice to, because I knew that my parents had a very, very hard childhood. And for that, I was able to see that. And then he began to take me through the steps. And I got sober in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas. And in that area, we believed in doing the steps quickly. Get through them. And, you know, they said, just get through them, because the next thing they want you to do is work with somebody. Just get going. And in Texas, when I learned, somebody will say, How much sobriety should you have to sponsor someone? We were told, just stay a step ahead. You start working with someone immediately. That's what Evie did. That's what Bill did. That's what Bob did. You immediately start working with another alcoholic. That's what it's all about, to start helping others. So I did my steps. And when I did my fifth step, I only had five things on my first inventory, and that was my husband, my parents, and the United States Air Force and the Baptist Church. Those were my five things. I have since had, with the things I did sober, you know, life is in session, so the inventory goes on. It's a lifetime of inventory. But what happened is, and I had my sons on harms done, because I did not feel resentment. But when I did my fifth step, Frank looked at me and he said, Paul, I had used the word, I had harmed my children. And he said, no, Polly, you didn't harm your children. You abused your children. You're a child abuser. And in my heart of hearts, I knew that. I knew that, because you see, when I would come to out of a blackout and I would see my kids, I would either see something, I could tell I had hurt them, or I could just see the fear in their eyes of me. And I just couldn't stand it. So the only thing I could do, because I hated myself so bad, was just take another drink, because I couldn't stand who and what I was. And make no mistake, I loved these little boys. I loved them. And he looked at me and he said, "Polly, you're going to make amends to these boys." And I didn't know how I was going to do that. How am I going to make amends to these little boys? I mean, how do you do that? And when I got sober, my sons were 14 and 16 years old. So what he had me do, and I think it's so important, is for me anyway, he had me write everything out on a 3x5 card, because he said, if you don't write it down, you may not get it out. And I made my amends in front of, I had both of my sons at once. If I had that to do over, I wouldn't do that. I would do it separately. I've since done many amends with them separately, but the first time I did it, they were together. What I did is I read my little cards, and Frank had me write another card. And that card said, "I am so sorry that this happened to you, and I'll be the very best mom I can be for the rest of my life." And what happened was, is when I had read those little cards, I did exactly what the book said. I said, have I left anything out? Do you have anything to say to me? And what happened is I felt like I had just been shot up with two Uzis, because my two sons were so angry. They were so angry for what they had been through, for the kind of mother I had been, and they had no problem telling me so. And what I did is I just kept reading my little card that Frank had told me to write, that I am so sorry that that happened to you, and I'll be the very best mom I can be. When I got sober, I ended up after I had done that, when I started going to a lot of meetings, and I ended up having some affairs in Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, I had to do a lot more amends. But one of the things I want to say is I had a husband who was 100% disabled from the Air Force. He was a victim of Agent Orange, and he had congestive heart failure at 36. He had such an enlarged heart, he could hardly walk or breathe. And I was incapable of taking care of him. I also, when I got sober, my father was dying of colon cancer in Abilene, Texas. And it was 3 hours away, and I couldn't get to my dad because I was drunk all the time. And I'm an only child. These are the facts of my life when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so grateful that I didn't drink again. But I want to quickly tell you that I ended up marrying a man in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not have an affair with him. He had been my friend since I was 6 months sober. And when I was 3.5 years sober and he was 4.5 years sober, he said, "Polly, I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." And this October the 27th, Dave and I will be married 40 years. I got to marry the man of my dreams. And we've walked this journey together. And he's 44 years sober, and I'm 43 years sober. And we have had such a journey. We have had so much joy in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've had so many challenges in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've had so much sadness in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because just because you're sober doesn't mean that life isn't going to show up. Because life is going to show up, and life showed up for us. And what has happened is that we ended up losing Dave's oldest child, Michael. So we've had the death of a child. I've lost both of my parents sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. In 1993, when the bottom fell out of aerospace in Southern California, we had to file bankruptcy. We had foreclosure on our house. I mean, life has been in session. And I just want to quickly tell you about today. Today, my husband is very ill. And he has been for 5 years. But I want you to know that selfish, self-centered alcoholic, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous 43 years ago, that could not care for her husband, I am the 24/7 caregiver of my husband today. And not only am I able to do that today, I'm privileged to do that. It is my honor to do that. And I have five grandchildren. And those, I have never done anything to those grandchildren. I have loved them. I have been the grandmother. Anybody, I'm a roller coaster riding grandmother. Now they're grown today. And they're, you know, but when they were little, I was there. I was the grandmother. I get to do do-overs. We get to do do-overs in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've gotten to do some big do-overs in this program. I've been able to care for my son. I've been able to be a grandmother. I couldn't be a mother, but I've been able to be a grandmother. I've been able to make living amends. But let me just tell you the way I feel today. I know that that woman that I used to be sits right here. She's there. And I know that if I don't work this program with everything I've got, if I don't sponsor women, if I'm not of service, if I don't take people through the big book, if I don't study the big book, if I don't say my prayers and I don't reach for the God of my understanding, she'll come back. And I don't ever, ever want her to show up again. I don't ever want that person there again, but I know she's there. I know that at any moment, the book says we just get a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That's all I get is one day. And I don't want to rest on my laurels. And I don't want to forget to do my readings. And I don't want to forget to talk to God, because I love the person that Alcoholics Anonymous, I love the person I am today. But I know that if I don't do it every day, if I don't show up, if I don't be the person that God wants me to be and do the things that this program requires of me, she'll return. And I'm like the rest of them. I'm so grateful for Zoom. I'm so grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't even think we were down a week into quarantine and AA was on it. They were on it, and they had the first Corona Woodstock, and we were going. And I don't know about you, but I could go to five meetings a day. Today, I'm only going to three, but I could go to five every day, because Alcoholics Anonymous is on. I can't even believe it. Here I am sitting in the UK with people from all and from Vienna and all over the place. I just can't believe the gifts that we get to have. And that here, I didn't even have to get on an airplane. I'm sitting in the office, and it is amazing. And I love you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job, Holly.
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 Holly.